Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Getting your child confidently from A to B without losing your sense of identity along the way is a challenge. Your baby is your number one priority. You want to protect them at all costs to ensure they're safe, secure, and definitely supported. By having a pushchair that makes you feel more at ease, you can focus on everything else that comes with having a baby. Owning a Bugaboo will feel like it's like an extension of your personal style, known for its seamless and smooth wheels and plenty of storage space. That really mattered to me. A Bugaboo isn't ever a burden. It's just become part of the family. Find out more by visiting bugaboo.com. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice that you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. It's no secret that childbirth is tough, but the reality of what follows is rarely discussed. I guess you could say it's shrouded in mystery, and while no two births are the same, I want to use my story to share exactly what happens in the hope that this will empower others with the truth and to encourage a conversation. This is a deeply personal thing for me to do, and in the absence of any education about the whole process and knowledge, I feel that all too many women just aren't capable of making informed decisions or even trusting their own bodies. I must also add a note that this episode contains some graphic childbirth references, and it may be triggering for some of you, so please do make your own judgment to switch off at any time or come back to it at a later date. So this week's Food for Thought, as I've said, explores my own birth story with midwife and author Marie Louise, also known as the Modern Midwife. Hello, Marie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. I can't thank you enough for, first of all, speaking to me before we even decided to record this podcast, because you were very, very reassuring on the phone.
Oh, good. No, it's always good to have a little chat, I think, beforehand when it comes to anything rather than just talking blindly. It's always more difficult, I think. So I'm really glad that I could help in some way. And of course, massive congratulations. He is beautiful. I stalk your Instagram quite a lot to see him.
Oh, thank you. I think obviously it's so good to have someone as qualified as you to help me with this podcast recording, because I've never ever recorded something so personal.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think in my entire life, Marie. So as much as we are having the time of our lives, I think giving birth in a pandemic wasn't really anything I ever thought would happen. Time just goes so quickly, and my birth definitely didn't go the way I wanted it to. And I mean, yeah. I was as I told you, I wanted a home birth. And what happened, I was wearing a mask in an operating theatre.
Couldn't be more different, yeah.
No, it definitely didn't. And most of the stuff that I started with, so for our listeners, if we start with how I think I first started learning about childbirth from antenatal classes and online hypnobirthing, which my husband and I did together. Let's just explain for everyone listening, what is hypnobirthing and why is it recommended by the NHS?
Yeah, so the NHS, I'm so pleased that how much the NHS are now supporting hypnobirthing and how we are taking a turn really to return to our midwifery heritage, as I say it, and our knowledge of the birthing body and pregnancy. So hypnobirthing is a set of mind management tools, and it's an illogical approach to pregnancy, birth, and also the postnatal period that utilizes evidence. So when you take a hypnobirthing course, you aren't just learning about hypnobirthing, you are learning about your pregnancy as well. So it's a form of antenatal education. And the number one thing that I always start with in hypnobirthing is fear dumping and releasing that fear, because a lot of what we understand about birth, it comes from the media that is not an accurate reflection of how birth looks or even how birth should look.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I fell in love with it is that I did find it completely empowering. In fact, it was the hypnobirthing course that made me originally want to have, I know it didn't happen for me, but the home birth. It really educated me, I felt, on tapping into that natural aspect, which, like you say, all I'd ever known, apart from my friends' stories, was those TV dramas where a woman is on a bed screaming, like the loudest scream you can imagine, and everyone's running around. Like, it's mad.
Yes. So with home birth, the best evidence that we actually have shows that home birth for healthy, low-risk women actually means less intervention and better outcomes. And that's for both first-time mums and mums that have had babies before. So actually, home birth appears to be safer for all low-risk women.
I guess this is the bit I've been half dreading but half looking forward to, and it's talking openly about something personal. So, I've spoken through this before with Marie, and the reason again that I'm sharing this is just to let you all know that it's okay when things don't go to plan. And I had quite naively thought, I'm fit, I'm healthy, everything will just go to plan, which I'm sure I'm not the only one that had that kind of misconception. But I guess my birth story starts in my 40th week, because I was the last one in my antenatal group to... You're getting all the WhatsApp messages from everyone. All your friends start checking in with you. Everyone is like, are you going to labor yet? Is this the day? Oh, are they Braxton Hicks? Is that a contraction? You know, everything.
Oh, yes, exactly. The pressure, it just starts mounting, doesn't it? I joke with women and I say, you need some sort of person to deal with all of the inquiries that you've got set up, an additional email like have you had your baby yet.com or something. It's ridiculous,
because I think, and you'll find this, Marie, when you get to that point, you feel you are huge, you're in some sort of pain, you've got loads of weird pregnancy symptoms that everyone has.
Yeah,
but me, because of COVID, the coronavirus, everything was different. I'd already been told, I had this amazing midwife that I was very lucky. I saw the same lovely girl, Holly, throughout the initial stages.
And she had, brilliant.
Yeah, I was really, really lucky. And I think coronavirus helped with that because they wanted to minimize the exposure, I guess, to multiple people. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I was very
fortunate. Yes, you had real continuity. That's so good. Yeah.
And that made me really confident. I really wanted her ideally at the home birth if it had happened. But I was told that if I'd gone into labour at the weekend, basically I couldn't have a home birth anyway. And the situation could change daily with coronavirus. So one day, if there was a shortage of ambulances, I may not be able to have that birth anyway. And we'd bought the whole kit. I had a birthing pool at home. I'd set the lounge up, everything.
Oh.
And I think we'll start with talking about sweeps. So, I mean, I had what they call an unsuccessful sweep in my 40th week, and then again in week 41. So How often, Marie, do babies actually come on time? And what is a sweep for people listening?
So babies actually, the percentage of babies that actually come on their due date is between 3 to 5%. not very many, to answer your question directly. And as we know, a due date is just a window of time. So it's the normal length of pregnancy is often debated and not agreed globally to start with. And various different experts do say different things about what they believe to be acceptable. However, in the UK, we say between 37 weeks to 42 weeks. So that's a whole 5 week window. So babies can come at any time. And we do get fixated. Naturally, we get fixated on this due date because that's the date that we've been given. However, it's completely normal to go overdue. It's completely normal to have a baby at 37 weeks. That is still very much in the window of normality. And I think as soon as you've hit the 40 week mark, you know, everyone's like, oh, okay, well, that's the day that you're meant to have your baby. What's going on? You know, and there's this sort of ingrained narrative that something's not right because you haven't had your baby yet. But actually, that is completely incorrect. It's very, very normal to go overdue. And in fact, 80% of first-time mums do go overdue. So a sweep is where a midwife, it can be done in a clinical area, so it can be done where you would normally have your antenatal appointments, or it can be done at home if a midwife is coming out to see you, because although it's a form of intervention still, it's not a form of medical intervention. So we're only using our fingers as opposed to drugs or any pharmaceuticals. Then what we would do is we'll find the cervix, and the aim of it is to stimulate the cervix. So ideally we could get a finger into the cervix and separate the membrane, so those waters there that are touching on the top of the cervix. And that stimulation, well, the aim of that is to send messages to the uterus to start contracting and say, you know, right, let's start acting now. It's got a 50% success rate. So we don't really know if it works.
So my whole process, I remember it was week 41. So we'd done these sweeps, and the day after, my mucus plug went. I might let you describe what a mucus plug is to everyone, actually. You're probably used to it.
Well used to it, yeah. I mean, so mucus plug isn't quite the knight in shining armor, shall we say, but it has done such an amazing job of protecting your baby. So that's what I always say to women. It doesn't look like a knight in shining armor, but it really is, I promise you. It basically looks like a dollop of snot that might have a bit of blood stains, sort of stringy consistency to it. And what that has been doing is that has been protecting your baby from infection throughout pregnancy. So it builds up during pregnancy, and some women actually lose their mucus plug and then it reforms again. But generally what happens is your mucus plug forms when your cervix starts to do things that is coordinated by the uterus contracting and having tightenings. So then the cervix will just slightly open a bit, and that will enable the mucus plug to come down and out. And that's why it happens.
It's quite gross, just to be really honest. It was quite yeah. Like a bit of gunge, like pinky, whitey, dischargey gunge in your knickers.
Yes, yeah, exactly. No, it doesn't look very pleasant. I do pre-warn them and say, don't worry about it. It looks like a big dollop of like strange snot.
When it came, I was like, oh, this is it. You know, this is,
yeah,
this means it's starting. But this was the misconception, because for me, Marie, on the Wednesday, so the day after the sweep, the mucus plug went, and I'd already been having Braxton Hicks, but then by Thursday evening, I was definitely having contractions, or in hypnobirth and they call it surges, which I was working like normal, which was one big mistake I think I'd made, because I just wanted to, I knew it could be a long process. I was trying to act like normal, I remember, and it was after lunch, and at first they lasted about 30 seconds long, I'd say. They were every 15 minutes, but my water hadn't broken. And that's the big misconception, like you said, I wasn't aware of that. And it was only, so this had happened on Wednesday, I'd had contractions all day long. And then Thursday, another whole day of it, quite painful. I mean, they are very painful, the contractions. I didn't have any pain relief. And I remember telling my husband, one thing we'd learned in antenatal, so for anyone listening that's been through birth or tried this, I just needed him to push my hips together.
Yeah.
it really helped just to feel pressure. And I had a hot water bottle that I kept putting, because I felt the pain in my back, not my belly.
What position was your baby? Was Zachary?
So Zachary was the right way up, head down, but he was and facing the correct way, which...
Okay, so he wasn't OP, as we call it. He wasn't back to back.
No, no.
Okay.
He was the right way around. Well, they thought at this point, because that was questioned again later, but he was always the right way around. But
yeah.
He was a bit towards the left. So he wasn't going down as straight as they'd hoped.
Sure, right.
And I think that had also triggered my pelvic girdle pain a little bit throughout pregnancy, all these different kind of symptoms. So,
So I
would end up on my hands and knees on the living room floor, and we'd set our hypnobirthing scene up by this point. We got all the cushions out on the floor. My husband had bought loads of lovely candles because that's what I wanted. I had my jars of marshmallows, you know, all the stuff that you really think that, you know, you really want to get out to make you feel comfortable.
But and how did you feel at that time? Did you feel excited? Did you feel nervous? Like, how were you actually feeling?
I think, it was tiring because I hadn't slept the Wednesday evening because the contractions, it's very difficult to sleep when you're getting contractions.
Yeah.
They say sleep.
It's not possible.
Maybe for like 5 minutes and then you're woken up again. But I was excited because I thought I was about to have this birth that I'd always envisaged. You know, I was like, oh, these contractions, they must be speeding up. But then they didn't speed up, and we rung the midwife, and come Friday. So bear in mind, this had already started on Thursday. We're now on Friday. Holly came back over with another midwife, and they used the speculum. I don't know how you describe that. It was like a glass that they put inside to see if my walls had broken, and they had broken but only partially.
Yeah.
So they said, and I wasn't aware of this whole scenario being a thing. I didn't know that if your waters had partially broken, you're at more of a risk if you leave it any longer of an infection. So they said that I'd have to go to the hospital. I had like 12 hours to go into labor at home, and if it didn't happen, then my dream of a home birth was over already before it had even begun.
Yeah. So with that, yeah, so speculum is usually plastic, but it looks like glass, so it's just clear. And with the waters going, that's exactly it. If once your waters have gone, most hospital trusts and guidelines will say, ideally, you want to be in labour within 24 hours. So that's when that clock watching that sort of that starts, which is exactly what happened with you. They've given you a specific time that you would need to go in to be induced.
And I was terrified of the thought of, I hadn't been into hospital, just to set the scene for everyone, because of COVID I'd avoided the hospital for such a long time. And at this point it was a little bit scary because obviously at the time we're recording this remotely now, still Marie and I on our laptops at home, but at this point, it was very much heightened. The cases were rising. It was the record week of cases, actually, the week I think this was happening. And it was really scary because I thought, let's hope it comes. And I think that pressure of even being told that didn't really help.
No.
And then we ended up going into the hospital at midnight that day. And my husband straight away obviously couldn't be with me. And that's another level. I'm getting contractions. I'm on my own in the hospital at midnight.
Yeah.
And I was being told, oh, you need to be monitored now. And then, you know, you'll probably have to go and be induced. And that for me was something I hadn't even really thought about, being induced. So if you could describe to all our listeners what being induced means as well, just so we've got the clarification there.
Yeah, so induction is where your labour is started artificially, and that can be for a number of different reasons. One of the top reasons for induction of labour is actually going overdue. As I said, it can be for many different reasons, like raised blood pressure, like if your waters go and you don't go into labour within that time frame. And the process of induction of labour involves pharmaceuticals, so it involves drugs, and usually that is prostaglandins, so that's like a gel or a pessary, and then it moves on to IV syntocinon, which is a hormone drip that contains oxytocin, So we produce oxytocin naturally in our bodies. And that's, you know, I talk a lot about oxytocin enhancers and creating the best birthing environment and why home birth can be a brilliant option for oxytocin. But that's the synthetic version that we use in hospitals. And just one point on induction, a lot of people do think that because you're having synthetic oxytocin, as in the man-made drug that we use for induction, that is the same as you making your own oxytocin. Yeah. But in fact, the latest research shows that that synthetic oxytocin does not cross the blood-brain barrier. So therefore, it is your body utilizes it very differently. So, yeah, so it's a medical procedure, and it is you need to be in hospital for it because of the drugs and be monitored quite closely if you are having your labor started artificially, so an induction.
Yeah, it was to be told that, because obviously I had really wanted to have a complete different scenario. I think it was such a shock, and I was on my own in the middle of the night in a hospital, and I couldn't see my husband for an hour or more because of the monitoring process that was happening at that point in time to check obviously the baby was still healthy. I presume I was hooked up to the machine. But we actually bumped in at 1 a.m. to another midwife when we were walking down the corridor when I'd rejoined my husband, who said, well, there's no point you going into the labor ward yet because we don't have room until the next morning. And she said, I suggest you go back home. And we were so grateful to bump into this midwife. She was amazing, Marie. She was called Rachel, and she just said, go and have some time with your husband, have a cuddle, get into bed, just try and relax. Because the whole experience for me so far, I don't think I'd even been very good at producing my own oxytocin because of all the events that happen and COVID and all the different things. I think I was the least, I didn't feel like I was in this loving environment. I just felt scared and frightened. And I guess that didn't help my labor progress naturally either, looking back. It probably didn't help at all. But anyway, it still didn't happen. And at this point, obviously, I hadn't slept since going back to the Thursday. We're now waking up on Saturday morning to go into the hospital. And we went straight to the labor ward this time, and that ruled out the birth center, which would have been my second option, because I'd put in my head, well, a home birth, okay, if it goes wrong, I'll just be whizzed up the hospital up the road and I'll pop into the birth center and I'll get in this nice pool, you know, the dream scenario in your head. And that was ruled out because of risk of infection. And I didn't really know that. So with a risk of infection, why was that the case at that point, Marie?
Yeah, so your main defense mechanisms against infection during pregnancy for you and your baby are your mucus plug that we've mentioned earlier, and then that goes as labor starts, and then your water. So your baby's actually in water. We call it membranes, and that protects you and the baby from infection. Then once they go, there is the longer that we leave it, the more chance that infection can start, because that defense mechanism is no longer there, and an infection has the opportunity to travel up the genital tract and to affect the mother and of course the baby. And that can be presented in various different ways, like, you know, a faster heart rate, raised temperature, but sometimes we don't know the severity of the infection and how it's developing. So that's why it's advised that ideally you would go into labor within 24 hours. However, some women don't do that and they decline induction of labor and they just have antibiotics and wait for their body to do it. That is an option, but that does go against the guidelines because of the risk of infection.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, see, enough that you just don't know, I guess. And this is why it's so important to discuss these things, because I didn't even know that this would occur. And I also then obviously arrived at the labor ward that morning, and luckily there was a nice room that we could use which had a pool in it. So again, I thought, oh, maybe I am allowed to use the pool. Got my hopes up a little bit. But she actually had to, the lovely midwife on duty that day, Betty, she actually had to pop my waters, the ones that were left. So only half the waters had gone in the first place, which was even more confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing.
So many different things. So I had to lie there on the bed. And it's a very strange feeling when you feel all this warm liquid gushing out of you suddenly.
Very strange feeling, yeah. I say to women, I pre-warn them if I have to do it. It's called an ARM, an artificial rupture of membranes in maternity. So that's the breaking of your waters. And I always say to women before I do it, this is going to feel so strange. It's going to feel like you're wetting yourself, but you're not. You've just got no control over this fluid that's coming out of you. And quite often women are shocked at how much fluid there is. There's so much fluid, isn't there? And it keeps coming away.
So much. I couldn't believe it. We had so many of those protective sheets down on the bed. And of course, so that the next thing was that I was told, obviously, that obviously being induced, they advised me you probably should try and take the pain relief, the epidural. And on my birth plan, the epidural was the lowest. Like I didn't want it. I'm terrified of needles, which is why I would have made a rubbish dietitian in a hospital, because I just... not for me at all being around that environment. I admire all of you. And I'd have to have a cannula fitted. And a cannula for me, I was shaking with nerves already after being broken. Then I knew from friends' advice that apparently it's just so much better to have the pain relief before you start those artificial hormones pumping in, because apparently that's much more painful, like you said, because it is so artificial. It's not natural.
Yeah. So everyone does have a different opinion on this, and it really does depend on the clinical situation and the patient themselves. So for example, I have had women where they've had three babies before and they've had a little bit of a stalled labor, say, so the labor hasn't progressed, and as midwives say, well, you know, that we think that she'll need just a little woof of Cinto, and basically that just means that we think the body just needs a tiny bit of Cintosin on to kind of kickstart the labor again, or to continue on. So in that case, you know, some women opt not to have the epidural because we don't think that they're going to be utilizing the Cintosinon for a very long time. So that's why, you know, they might opt for and say, actually, let me just see how I go first, and then, you know, they might meet their baby within an hour or so. Not always, but I mean, this is kind of the other side to it. So that's why it's very specific and unique. If you haven't had a baby before, if you know you're not in established or active labor and you're just starting off on Cintosinon, then maybe you would want to have the epidural before. But it's not always the case for everyone. It's kind of like a case by case judgment, I suppose. Yeah,
because I think we knew that at this point, I just was not progressing, and I think because of my fear and the whole situation, it just wasn't happening. So we had the epidural. I think at that moment in time in my head, honestly, I just felt like a bit of a failure. I felt, and I'm sure lots of women, it's very difficult to describe. I knew I'd break down recording this episode. I feel like because it's everything that you didn't want, I felt like I was in a scenario where I was bringing a baby in a way I just didn't want it to happen already. I was just hooked up. My arm was hanging off these, you know, all these different cables and tubes. And it just didn't feel right because I tried gas and air. And it didn't really offer me any pain relief. I'm not sure what your thoughts are. Is it more effective on some people than others? Because for me, it felt like I was given a bit of a headache.
it does. So gas and air, some women absolutely love it and some women absolutely hate it. Again, we are all so different. So it works very differently for different people. And I think in particular as well, if the situation is, you know, if you're at home using gas and air in a pool, for example, then it might give you some relief. If you're in a hospital environment that's a bit of an alienated environment to you, you're already feeling quite anxious and concerned. A lot of what you had planned has then had to change. Then Entonox may not work as well. And I can completely, and it can make you feel a bit sick as well on top of that. And when you're feeling anxious, you feel a bit sick anyway. And the headachey feeling that you described, that is very common. But I just, before we go on, just with the epidural and the whole environment, that it's so tough, I think, when this happens and when you have such a beautiful plan of how everything is going to go. And like, you know, you were saying about how you've set up your lounge and it looks, you've got all your candles and it's all so calming and wonderful, and then that's gone from that situation to it being not only are we in, you know, the midst of a global pandemic and you're in a hospital that seems completely absurd at that time, then on top of that, you're having an epidural and having this synthetic hormones. It is very scary. And I think that that's why it's so important that we do talk openly more about this, so that the last thing that a woman ever does when she walks away from her birth is feel like she's failed in some way. Because I always say it is impossible to fail at labor and birth. It's everybody is different. There's no right and there's no wrong way to have a baby. And when things don't go according to plan, we need to understand that even more, that there's no such thing as failure. You do what's right for you at the time and what's right for your baby, given the guidance and advice that you've been given. And there's some things that are out of your control, like, you know, what happened with you, and you've done the best that you can possibly do to have the best experience you could possibly have. And it didn't go that way. But the key, I think, message is to know that no one is ever a failure here, ever.
Yeah. I think that's so important. God, welling up when you were saying that, because so many women will go through this type of experience. And it's scary. Not only you self-administering something like an epidural, which I didn't know, again, that I control. So I would have to click the button and you feel it like a cold drip going.
Yeah.
Down and then the catheter, of course, I knew you'd have a catheter fitted to help you pass urine, but I hadn't really processed the fact that I'd be led on my back for a whole day in a hospital room, which again is something hypnobirthing told me was not ideal. I mean, they talk about, I remember it very clearly, UFO, which, do you want to say what that stands for, everyone?
Yeah. So UFO is upright, forward and open. So you want your pelvis to be as upright as possible. You want it to be tilted slightly forward, because that enables the baby to get into that good position. So that's the OA position, the position that Zachary was in.
Yeah.
And open. So you want your rather than crossing your legs over, lots of women, we sit, don't we, with our legs crossed over. That actually reduces the amount of space in the pelvis. So towards the end of pregnancy, so we're talking from about 34 weeks, you want to make sure that you're a UFO as much as possible. So you're sitting upright. You're having your pelvis tilted slightly forward. So that means that your pelvis is higher than your knees, if you can, when you're sat. And as open as possible, so trying not to cross your legs over, things like that. Yeah,
and I remember doing that religiously in the weeks up to it, and sitting on my Swiss ball, all the kind of things that that they tell you that you should be prepared for. But I think the epidural and all these different things had such a kind of almost a demonized approach to anyone to, you know, I felt like when I was lying in the bed that I was going against absolutely everything that I had envisaged. And of course, I guess having no sleep by this point for quite a few days and being very scared of the dangers, and people are trying to tell me there's a risk to my baby, and I couldn't quite process it. I was like, but why, you know, what's happening? And then my husband tried to make me eat something, I remember, because thankfully at this point he was allowed in that little room on the labor ward, and I know so many women didn't have the husband for that bit because of COVID. So I was very lucky at this point anyway to have him there for that bit. But he tried to give me a smoothie, a green one. I vomited straight back up. So then I was vomiting as well as having the epidural.
And
I was thinking to myself, I was like, this is not going to plan at all. And by the early evening on the Saturday, I'd only got to about five. I say only, it's still obviously an achievement, but I got to 5 centimetres. And the midwife we'd had, Marie, that starts, as you know, you do shifts, don't you? So she was clocking off at 8. And I thought, I want him to come before 8 p.m. because I've had this one woman with me the whole day.
Oh, yeah.
That you really get on with.
Of course you do. Yeah, and you build a bond. The thing is, spending that much time, and it's intimate, as you know, as well. Yeah. You are in this room and they're with you constantly. They're providing you with so much information that you need to know about what's happening, and the situation is ever evolving during birth. Things happen quite quickly, even though I know you're with your cervix, it took you a while to get to 5 centimeters. But in terms of with the monitoring, that's ever evolving. You're constantly hearing the baby's heartbeat, seeing it perhaps on a screen or printed out, depending on what technology they're using. And when you've got the Syntocin on, the hormone drip running, you know, these are constantly changing situations that that you're both monitoring together, and you do build up such a close bond with someone in that room. And that's your birth space as well, I say to women. And when I'm working on Delivery Suite and providing that one-to-one care to women, I always try to make sure that no one comes in that room before I say that they do, because that is a woman's birth space and we need to respect that. So yeah, you build up a very close bond. I can completely see why and how you'd want to have your baby by 8 p.m. With that midwife.
It's like another, you're so right in saying about how it's your space. And another added element to this was, of course, because of COVID, everybody wearing the masks throughout. I wasn't wearing one. It was only as things progressed. So the baby's heartbeat then began to increase, and I developed a very high temperature at the time. When I say very high, I think it was on the borderline of what was considered to be too high. But and then eventually, when a consultant came to examine me, so this is all progressing, and I, at this point, I just remember being a bit out of it because I guess I hadn't eaten all day as well, and you're going through labour, which is strange.
Goodness, yeah,
you don't feel like it when you're on an epidural, which is the weird thing because you do feel the contractions, but not obviously as heightened as they would have been without the pain relief.
Yeah.
You must be exhausted. But my baby then as well had pooed inside me.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that happened to my friend as well. And why does that happen, Maria, at that point? Is it common?
Yes, it can actually. So it's called meconium stained lichor. That's what we call it. And that it basically means that baby's had a poo inside. And that can be for various reasons. So the first reason it can be if babies are quite overdue, so they're quite mature, sometimes they can open their bowels in utero, as in have a poo during the end of your pregnancy, during your labour. And that can be down to maturity. But it can also be a sign of distress when they open the bowels as well in utero. And not only that, meconium is causes real irritation to the lungs. So if babies are to breathe in meconium at birth, it's called meconium aspiration. That can be extremely dangerous for babies, which is why we then really want to monitor babies quite closely. Mm. Having said that, lots of babies are born with meconium stained lichor and they're born in a very healthy condition. They have no further problems. But sometimes we know that there is a risk that they can aspirate that meconium. And meconium on the lungs, as I said, it's a real irritant. It can cause real problems with the breathing. So, yeah, it can come for various different reasons, but we need to monitor it the same because we can never be sure if it's down to the baby's not in distress and it's just that the baby's mature, or there's something else going on, such as an infection, and the baby has become distressed.
Yeah, which with my temperature at that point in time, I was obviously advised to take antibiotics straight away for me and the baby, and then being told you have to go and have a C-section. It was one thing after another. And first of all, I'm worried about the risk to the baby, but not really, I didn't really fully understand at that point in time what was happening. Obviously, I took the antibiotics as it went through the cannula in an IV drip. But I did ask at the time, and I said, well, can we assess how my baby is when he's born, you know, and then discuss this at that point afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I got to 8 centimetres, later on that day, my midwife had left. The room just seemed really hot. Everything seemed really, I saw the time and water, and I think I was in a bit of denial, or I just thought, well, maybe the room's so hot, that's why my temperature's rising. But
no, that's a logical thing to think. I think that's completely normal. I don't think that you were in denial. I think that's what we should be trying to do. We should be trying to enhance your environment as much as possible, mm-hmm. before we think, okay, perhaps this is worse than we thought. Perhaps we think this is an infection. You know, we need to look at the obvious things first before we start diving in and jumping in. And the World Health Organization say that we are offering too much too soon. So your approach is very logical. It's hot in here. Yeah. Let's cool it down and see what happens.
And the heating had been fluctuating that day, which was another little thing. Like, 1 minute it was too cold, but in order to heat the room, it's complicated in a hospital. You can't heat an individual room. It's hooked up to somewhere else.
Exactly.
So anyway, that aside, I obviously didn't want a C-section. And I remember being composed myself.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I remember at this point being very nervous because obviously the epidural is probably the most medication my body's received in a very long time. But I was physically shaking, Marie, to the point where I didn't know that's a side effect of an epidural. So my whole body, and I think it's important women know if they haven't had a baby, my whole body was vibrating. My teeth were chomping together, chattering. And that's because of the epidural. And I didn't know.
Yeah, so that can happen. And that coupled with the anxiety of the situation just can make things so much worse. I've looked after lots of women that have ended up really trembling and shaking and exactly as you say, their jaws chattering as well. It's quite shocking when you're going through it yourself, though. I haven't been through it myself, but I imagine and to witness it as a midwife,
you're watching your body and you have no control over it. And I think that's another thing to consider, is that you don't have control right now. Your body's doing what it needs to do, but you've got this other added intervention happening at the same time. And actually, if it hadn't been for my husband at this point, because we'd been taught in the hypnobirthing course to always ask about alternatives. And I have nothing against cesarean sections if that's a choice, but it wasn't my personal choice. It wasn't how I wanted to go. And he said, is there any other option? It was 11:30 p.m. By this point. And the consultant said, well, I'll give you one more hour if you're fully dilated or not, and then we can discuss this, and then we're going to give you a C-section. So again, I was given another deadline, an hour. And I was thinking, how do I suddenly wish my body, to get there? Miraculously, Marie, I was fully dilated when she came.
Yeah, it's amazing that you.
I was
wow.
How has my body suddenly expanded to the full 10 centimeters and it was midnight?
Exactly, against all odds, with your, oxytocin, probably natural oxytocin anyway, not being released, and you're feeling like that, and it's amazing your body still went for it.
I couldn't believe it. But at that point, I thought, well, I can push now. I want someone to help me because I couldn't move. You can't move on an epidural. That's another thing to add. Your legs are numb. You can't physically sit yourself up you can use your abs, but it's very difficult basically to move. And I didn't want to give birth led on my back. So I was asking questions like, well, can I push now? And they're like, no, you need to have the C-section. I was like, no, I don't understand. And my husband again pushed back and she said, well, we can try a forceps delivery. And again, forceps is one of those things I just heard scare stories about, Marie, about
how
it's banned in other countries in the world and how they should belong in a museum, all these sorts of things. And in my head, I was thinking, C-section or forceps, two of the things that I couldn't face. But I think actually I'm so grateful now for that choice. But first of all, I should add as well that I thought that by picking forceps, which I did over the C-section, I would be staying in that room. But I was it was like panic zone central. Loads of people enter the room and I was rushed to the emergency theatre and a mask was on my face and I couldn't really breathe. That was scary.
That, oh goodness, it sounds really, that whole process sounds very scary. And I'm a bit surprised, to be honest, that they didn't explain to you that that was what needed to happen, that you needed to, we call it a trial in theatre, meaning that it's a trial run of the forceps. And if the forceps doesn't work, then the next option is cesarean section, because then the baby needs to be born as soon as possible. So I am surprised that they didn't run through that with you, because that should always be discussed. In order for you to make informed decisions, you need to know what's happening. Yeah,
that's just it. And I think if it was said, it probably wasn't said in a way that was maybe empathetic, or in a way that's communicatable to someone like myself, who's not an expert in this area and the language used. Because I was just basically given a sheet of paper to sign. I remember having to sign this signature and not really understanding. And my husband and I both have spoken about this since, and we've gone into a lot of work on discussing the birth since. We both thought we'd be staying in that room, but no, we were quite shocked. And
that should have been explained to you quite clearly. Yeah, that should have been.
An operating theatre is, as many women will know who've had deliveries in this way, it's very bright. The light, it goes against, again, all the hypnobirthing things. And in COVID, I couldn't even see anyone's face, and everyone's wearing, there were so many people in there, everyone was wearing a mask, and I was being, because you can't lift your own body, so you're being transferred from one hospital bed into the actual operating table. And I remember them then saying, we're going to give you even more anaesthetic so you don't feel a thing. And obviously I was like, great, but how am I meant to push? Because she'd said, you get a go here, and if it doesn't happen, then we will do the C-section. So in my head, I was thinking, I've got to get this out. You know, I can't fail again. It was just another added element. And I don't think I'd experienced it up to this point, one bit of natural, happy, I'm giving birth feelings. I was just worried the entire time. Luck, the one silver lining to this whole story is that I was able to get him out in two pushes, which was...
Wow.
Just remember my abs. I remember thinking, I've got stomach muscles in there somewhere. If I can, maybe. And it's such a strange feeling, your baby being pulled out of your stomach and feeling it just being wrenched out of you. It's I can't really describe it, Marie. It's a difficult one to describe.
It is, and lots of women, to be honest, do describe that as being the feeling, because the baby is physically being pulled out with the forceps. Of course, when you're pushing as well, that is a great help, but it's a huge intervention to have a forceps birth. But just with what was happening clinically, I suppose the other side of things is sepsis is considered to be a medical emergency that needs addressing as soon as possible. And we know that sepsis is actually very dangerous for both mother and baby. So I think the way in which your birth was handled was probably as an emergency, so that the team are thinking, right, this baby needs to be born, we're concerned, the waters have been gone for a very long time, so we call it prolonged rupture of membranes. They're probably thinking there's meconium stained lichor there, so we're seeing some fetal distress. We're concerned that the maternal temperature is rising. You've got an increased temperature. And they're also concerned that the baby's heartbeat is a bit faster. So they're looking at it from the whole clinical perspective. And their best interest is to keep you and baby safe. But at the time, that is very scary. And when things aren't being explained thoroughly to you and properly to you, and the focus is on it being an emergency, and that, you know, from the beginning, as I was saying, that things... We don't always need to treat things, even when it is an emergency. We usually have time to explain, and we all have time to just approach things slightly calmer.
Exactly.
But it's difficult. It's such a difficult situation for everyone, I think.
Oh, and I must reiterate that absolutely everybody was a complete professional in their job. I mean, the surgeon was obviously highly skilled, and everyone there knew what they were doing, and of course they were saving my baby's life and me at that point in time. And I'll be eternally grateful to the NHS for how they supported us, really. even though it was obviously a very difficult circumstance, but I got him out on the two pushes. But that's when...
That's amazing.
I was really proud of that. Thanks.
You should be proud of that. Damn right. That is amazing. You haven't had a baby before and you just, pushed him out in two pushes. That is really extraordinary. And again, it just goes to show the power that the female body is capable of, really. And when you need that inner strength most, you find it somewhere. And I often say to women, motherhood as it presents itself in various different ways, and sometimes it's very difficult, but it shows you that you have a whole new level of strength that you never even knew that you had in you.
Oh my goodness, I definitely didn't know I had that in me. And I was after told by my husband when we got home eventually that the surgeon had said, well, she's got four push attempts and then we do the C-section. So I was relieved that had been the case. But then, of course, the minute he was born, this is another thing that I'm sure lots of other mums can relate to, that's probably happened to them, but I didn't get the scenario I'd expected. I didn't really hear him. I didn't see him. He was taken straight from me, quite rightly so, to obviously save his life, but he was immediately needed antibiotics. He was given to the pediatric doctor. He couldn't breathe properly. And they were talking at the time, my husband said, because I was a bit out of it at this point, just in panic as to why can I not see my baby, that he'd be taken to the NICU, the neonatal, the intensive care unit for babies. And they tried three times to place a tube down his throat, and miraculously, I don't know how. And I remember them saying, oh, he doesn't need to go now. I just remember her saying, he doesn't need to go now. So he started breathing by himself, and I didn't get the skin to him. He didn't get the stuff in, but at least he started breathing. And that was the beginning of everything in COVID happening. So my husband was basically told he could hold him very quickly, and then he was told to go. I'd only packed a hospital bag for one night stay as, the backup bag. And I didn't really realise that I would be on my own in a ward in my mask with a baby by myself. Ended up being 7 days. I don't even know how to describe this. I know I'm making this podcast go on a lot longer than my normal episodes do. I want people to know that the wards are usually very, and I'm sure they're trying their hardest in this difficult situation, but they're quite positive places normally, apparently. I think it was you that said to me that normally, the husbands are walking up and down with the babies and it's all a nice place. But this was very, very different, the environment. And I had such bad, I think, anxiety, obviously, my little one's health. My health, being on a drip, I remember holding a bag of my wee when I eventually could walk to get out and walking around with it. It's very strange, but it's not an environment that's conducive to sleep, a ward, is it? I mean, people are every 4 hours checking on you, which is great, but you can't sleep.
No, exactly.
There was none of that. And I'd been awake. So just to paint the picture, this is now Sunday. He was born at 12:30 a.m. on the Sunday. I'd been awake since Wednesday evening, Thursday, roughly. It's a long time, and I began to suffer from something that I'd never heard of. I started to hear voices in my mind. I didn't know at the time. I was convinced they were real, and I thought I could hear other people talking about, what a bad mum I am already, saying that I'm superficial, or all these horrible things, or they're going to take my baby away from me. And when they eventually let my husband come in, the voices were even worse. When he came to visit on like day five, they're going to take my husband away from me because of COVID. I was hearing these voices in my head, and so much so that I remember going out telling one of the midwives on the shift, I can hear you're talking about me, please can you stop it, it's making me feel uncomfortable. And I think there was one incident where I'd heard a discussion, but the rest of it was completely in my head. And I was terrified of the blinds. I was terrified thinking there are people outside listening in. And I've ever since been getting therapy for that. Thankfully, I'm better now, I'm home. But is that something that you see a lot of, things like that happening?
So what you're describing is, it does sound like a form of psychosis, and we know postnatally women do suffer from various different forms of mental health illnesses and problems. But hearing voices and that kind of paranoia is generally associated with psychosis, and it can be induced from trauma. It can be induced from the lack of sleep, and it's a really sad statistic, but around about 30,000 women per year suffer from birth trauma, not specifically psychosis, but birth trauma. And, you know, that's something that I can't deny needs a lot of attention and work on, quite frankly. But it's very reassuring to see the amount of attention that maternal mental health is getting. Postnatally, what's going on physiologically in your body is very complex in terms of the various different hormonal compositions that need to change and switch up from maintaining a pregnancy to then going through your recovery and also breastfeeding your baby should you choose to breastfeed. So, and even if you don't choose to breastfeed, of course, that hormonal composition changes tremendously. So this is without having, you know, this is without including in a lack of sleep and a traumatic birth. So, and on top of that, having to care for a tiny person, even though you know this tiny person is coming, that level of responsibility is something that no one can ever properly prepare you for. And even myself, as mentioned, I've been a midwife for a very long time. I'm now having my first baby, but I'm very aware of the fact that there's nothing that I can do that will quite prepare me for that level of responsibility. So on top of that, you've got all of these things going on, and postnatally, many women do suffer with mental health disorders.
Yeah, I think, I'm off again. It was something I just never, I've always considered myself quite strong, positive, you know. I've been able to face many situations in my life that, you know, and again, it was like another, oh my goodness, I'm going crazy. You start questioning things in your head, and
but you are still strong and positive because of what, going through the experience that you went through and having the symptoms that you had are simply a result of your birth. It doesn't make, there's no reflection of who you are as a person and how strong or how weak or your tolerance level. This is, you know, it's down to physiology. It's down to physically what, you know, everything that your body's going through. It's not just mental strength. You know, you're, as mentioned, that all of those hormones that are flying around your body and that composition has completely changed. And no matter how resilient you are and how strong you are, that's going to change how you think and feel. It's a normal part of, in one way, going through some level of like baby blues, we think is completely normal for women, not to mention everything else that, of course, you've gone through. So, yeah, it's not a reflection on strength at all. And women say this all the time, that you know, oh, it's me, I couldn't cope. And it's not you at all. It's not a reflection of your personality and your level of tolerance. It's just absolutely not about that. But it's so easy to think that when you're going through it at the time. And, you know, it's easy for me to say this and give advice, and maybe I'll go through the same thing at the time and think, oh, you know, I thought I was stronger at this. I thought I knew how to handle this. But from an outsider's perspective, it's always important, I think, as women in particular, that we protect each other and we remind each other of this, regardless of your clinical, professional background, whatever. Women and mothers need to stick together.
100%. And I have such respect for just women in general. One thing I'd also forgotten about was the fact that I'd had an episiotomy. So I'd been cut during the forceps process, which doesn't even cost you. Your body goes through...
Yes, so
huge. It's the biggest, most dangerous yet amazing thing your body can possibly do, and it. I was really umming and ahhing whether to share that side of the mental health aspect because it is incredibly personal, and it was absolutely terrifying. But actually, after speaking to you on the phone, and it does help to debrief and speak about it out loud.
Yes.
Just to realize that these things can happen to people, but it doesn't And what's weird, Marie, but probably completely natural, is that I would do it all over again if I got my little boy. That's how much.
Love.
Yeah, it changes your world the minute you have them next to you. I mean, the time in the hospital was traumatic. The amount of tests he had to have, the antibiotics he was on.
Yes.
Moments where I was making important decisions without my husband, by myself, because of COVID on the ward. You're not allowed outside, so I didn't see the sky for 7 to 8 days or
a
chair because of coronavirus. Yeah. That also didn't help my mental health at all.
Yeah, I mean, we know the benefits of nature. I talk about this very frequently. I talk about it in my book, actually, when I discuss mental health, specifically being out in nature. You know, it's even prescribed in some countries as forest bathing. And it's seen to be a cure. Yeah, in some parts of Japan, it's actually prescribed forest bathing. It's a real thing to help with mental health. And it's prescribed sometimes before any medication. So, you know, that on top of everything else, not getting outside, getting fresh air, seeing a change of scenery, is not going to do your mental health any favours.
No, and I think your book is a wonderful example of something that is needed out there, because I think for so many women, we do need, as you are the modern midwife, we need a modern open discussion, not a stiff upper lip kind of approach. We need to be discussing everything. And I'm going to move on from talking about my experience now to taking a few questions from our listeners, because I've decided in this particular episode not to do a fact or fiction round. I think it's more important to spend time actually just getting questions and answers from you, Marie, because I think it's so important to dedicate the time for everyone listening. I think, so if we start with a question from Sam, I'm sure you can resonate. She said, I am 35 weeks pregnant and I'm a little bit scared of natural birth. How long is the average time it takes?
That's a really common question, but unfortunately, no, there's no average time. And the most variable part of labour is actually early labour and latent phase of labour. As you well know, yours went on for quite some time when you started your contractions on the Wednesday evening, I think you said it was, and it went all the way through to Friday afternoon. So that's the most variable part of labour, especially if you haven't had a baby before. And Sam sounds like it is her first baby. Approaching birth, the most important thing. So that's all I can say on length of labour, really, is that it's so variable. But the most important thing approaching birth is that you try something that I call the fear dumping exercise. So whatever it is that you're fearful, be honest about it. So that can either be with your midwife. You can talk to her about any of your fears, your concerns, your worries, and she will run through those with you. And then if you don't want to do that, then write it down on a piece of paper what you're concerned about. And I actually did this when I first fell pregnant. I was so nervous. I didn't expect it. So I did my own fear dumping exercise. And what it actually does is it breaks that neurological cycle, that circuit that you've got going around in your mind. Because when you are concerned about something and you don't get it out, whether that's writing it down or talking to someone else or even researching it and admitting it to yourself, like, okay, so what am I really concerned about here, and almost put that fear on trial and interrogate it. How did it get there? Where did you come from? You know, do that to it, because it changes the dynamic that the fear and the power of the fear has over you, because you want to get on top of your fear. You don't want your fear to be on top of you. So approaching birth, that's one of the best things you can do. Be honest about your fear. Try the fear dumping exercise where you talk to someone else about it. You write it down. Some women even tell me they've written it down. They've screwed it up and they've thrown it away. And they said it felt so liberating. But I mean, do whatever works best for you. But owning that fear, understanding it, is one of the best things you can do. You really need to work with your natural female physiology to approaching labor and birth, to even get you into labor, but to progress your labor as well. So in terms of length of time, we want your natural oxytocin to be flowing as much as possible. Sorry, long-winded answer.
No, that's good. It actually answers another one of the questions that I had as well. So that's really, really good. And then we have a question from Emily. And she said, is a contraction actually painful? I mean, Emily, I personally think, well, yeah, they're painful, but you can manage them. And then Priya has said, will eating a curry help induce labour? Marie, you must get that all the time.
I do get that all the time. The straight up answer is no.
No.
Yeah, straight up no. No, it's a bit of a myth. I mean, there's lots of things flying around about what will get you into labour. But to be completely frank, if there was one method that would get you into labour, someone would be a billionaire because so many women want to go into labour at 40 weeks. Yeah. But occult curry, the theory behind it is that it irritates your bowel, therefore it's going to irritate your uterus. There is no evidence to support that whatsoever. However, if you like a hot curry and you enjoy curry, indulge, go for it. But yeah, exactly. Please don't be under any misunderstanding that it's going to get you into labour, because it probably won't.
And to be honest, guys listening, I mean, you don't really want an irritated bowel when you're going into labour. I mean, your body needs so much. The last thing you need is stuff on top of that. And the final question, Anna has said, do you always tear? And I think tearing is one of those big things, isn't it? That every woman, I mean, I didn't want a cut, but it happens. What are your thoughts on that, Marie?
Yeah, so tearing amongst first-time mums, I have to be honest, is actually very common. However, there are various different things you can do to help reduce perineal trauma, as we call it. So that's tearing, and there are different grades and types of tears. I won't go into detail about all of them. But perineal massage can actually really help, because rather than give you the statistics, it's very common. I think the actual stats on it are 80% of women do have perineal trauma. So, you know, but there's no point in giving that and then not following it up with a solution. So one of the best things that you can do, that's I'm definitely doing, is perineal massage, because that can really help. We know from research that especially with first-time mums, it reduces perineal trauma. And also, to reassure women, most of the time women are unaware that they have had a tear, and I'll inspect the perineum, as we say, after. So I'll have a little look down below and say to women, oh, you've got a little first degree tear there, or you've got a second degree tear there that does need some stitches, you know, and we'll talk through it. And a lot of the time they say, oh, have I? And they don't know, because your body's flooded with so many hormones and even endorphins, especially if you do have an unmedicated birth. And if you don't have, if you do have medication, you won't feel it anyway if you've got an epidural on board. So, you know, most of the time women don't even know that they've torn, to reassure you, and they do heal beautifully.
And like you said, you're doing the massage. I did the massage and I had a device called an Epino, and I didn't tear. Obviously, I had the cut anyway, but I didn't tear. Some people don't. So there are things you can do. But I've definitely taken up more than enough of your time, Marie. And I think we should finish with a food for thought, because I could literally ask you so many more questions about this subject. And I think mine off the cuff today would be, just be open-minded. And when I say open-minded, talk out loud to trusted people, but be aware that if you're about to have a birth, have your options, but just be prepared for every eventuality, and just know that at the end of, no matter what struggle you go through, there is support available for you. That's one thing I've realised, is that the NHS and other people will be there for you. If you're like me, you're unfortunate enough not to have an ideal scenario. But just know that when you've got that little person there, more often than not, it does blur a little bit afterwards, which is nice. And I've really learnt that you can prepare and prepare and prepare, and you can think you're as fit and healthy as possible. You can do everything by the book, but it's probably not the best way. Be a bit more relaxed with your approach to this subject. And we need to talk more. And Marie, if you could leave our listeners with a useful food for today, what would that be?
Yeah, so I think in particular to your plans and being aware that they may well change, and to add to that, just always remember, I can't stress this enough, that nobody ever fails at labour and birth. There is no right and no wrong way to have a baby. So I'm a massive fan of birth planning, birth preparation. Equip yourself with everything that you need to know. And as things unfold and situations potentially evolve and change, ask all of the questions that you need to. Utilise your brain tool, as we call it in hypnobirthing, that stands for benefits. Any situation you're presented with that needs to change, ask for the benefits, ask for the risks, ask for the alternatives. Think about what your instincts, your gut instinct or your mum instinct, as I like to call it, mm-hmm. is telling you. And then consider nothing, because doing nothing is always an option that you can ask about. Yeah. So making sure that you run through all of your options and to try as best as possible for you to be the number one decision maker. So even if that plan has to change and you do need to go for a C-section or you need to have a forceps birth or whatever it is, that as things evolve, that you're the one to make that call. So as with you, you didn't want to have a C-section. You made the call. You were being advised a C-section, but you said, actually, I'd want to try for forceps. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important message for women to take away here, is that you need to speak up for what your preferences are. And in order to speak up for them, you need to first understand them. So it doesn't mean that your birth planning and preparation has gone out of the window, because if you didn't do that, you wouldn't be in a place to be able to make those decisions.
Yeah, so true. Oh Marie, gosh, I don't know how to thank you, first of all, for being there for me personally, but also for guiding us throughout this particularly different podcast episode. There's never been one like this on Food for Thought before. I hope it helps everyone. And if people want to learn a little bit more about you, where can they head to?
So I run an Instagram account called The Modern Midwife that you can, of course, follow me on. And I also have a website that I update regularly with blogs, evidence and various different bits of information. And I also have an online course, antenatal course, that I have just launched. You can find that on themodernmidwife.com. But it's been my pleasure, and I feel really privileged to actually have spoken, because there's lots of different people that you could have spoken to. So, I'm grateful it was me.
I think it's important to mention the book.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, the self-promotion side of things is always a bit difficult. I do have a book out called The Modern Midwife's Guide to Pregnancy, yeah. Birth and Beyond. And, you know, I really have covered as much as I possibly can in there to put something in the hands of women that where they are truly empowered and able to make informed decisions.
Honestly, I can't recommend it enough to everyone listening. And that's particularly why Marie's been so great. She honestly knows her stuff. So Marie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, you're going to absolutely love what's coming next week. So make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get this podcast out there so that we can reach higher highs in the charts and hopefully be able to help more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.